realize as I remembered the argument we'd had about a sperm donor at the time. I'd found her searching for clinics and donors online. When I'd snapped the lid of the laptop shut, she had jumped as if it were a crocodile about to bite her. I desperately wanted a child, but she simply could not see how small the suggestion of a sperm donor made me feel. Then, like a miracle, we conceived, and Jamie was born the following June. Had she instigated contact with Luke? Slept with him just one more time? She knew every inch of her fertility cycle, but only because I had piled the pressure on. I could not accept the doctor's prognosis of a low sperm count. I took another mouthful of coffee, trying to commit Luke's words to memory. He instigated the injunction, not Emma, as she had implied. Why would she lie about such a thing? Backgrounds could be checked, couldn't they? The same could be said for being in trouble with the police. Luke's version of events was similar to Emma's, but turned on its head. I felt disorientated, as if I was walking through a hall of mirrors. Had Emma gone off the rails after her mother left? Or was Luke lying, deliberately playing me to turn me against my wife? Wasn't that what stalkers did? Tore apart their victims until there was nothing left. My thoughts tortured me. I checked my watch. Jamie would be sleeping now. I pictured him dressed in his Superman onesie, his tousled blonde hair falling over his face as he slept. Everybody said he looked like his mother, but I couldn't see any of Emma in him. And his eyes, as blue as the sky. A throwback from a grandmother who had long since passed. At least that's what Emma had told me. A wave of nausea made itself known. I sat up on the bed, planting my bare feet firmly on the floor. The world felt like it was tilting, and I dug my fingers into the mattress as I clung on for dear life. I had to get to the bottom of it. Grief swept over me, preempting the results. In my mind, I'd lost a child and a wife. What if Emma left me? My name was on the birth certificate, but what rights did I have? Could I live with not knowing? If a DNA test proved Jamie wasn't mine, where did that leave me then? I thought of my relationship with my father, his steady influence on my life. Jamie needed his dad. Emma was troubled at times. How would she cope on her own? Despite it all, I still loved her.
Chapter 33, Emma, 2017. Postman Pat filled the air with a cheerful jingling tune as I replayed the latest episode for Jamie, who was nicely tucked up in his pajamas under a blanket, a bowl of jelly on his lap. I had spent the evening cuddling him on the sofa, but as Alex pushed his key in the door, I could already feel the panic rising in my chest. I met him in the hall, away from little ears. "You're an hour late. I was worried sick," I said, despite his text telling me he had been delayed. It was only 7 o'clock in the evening. I knew the train journey was horrendously long, but it did not stop me getting anxious as I awaited his return. Last night, I had quickly come to, waking up on my bedroom floor. I knew it was the lack of food that had made me dizzy and faint, so I had forced myself to eat some spoonfuls of dry cereal before bed. Spooked by the storm outside, I squeezed in beside Jamie, listening for every sound. Only as dawn filtered through his window blinds did I relax. "But I texted you. You said it was okay." He took one look at my face. "Is everything all right? Is Jamie..." "He's fine," I cut off his sentence. "But I'm not. I didn't get a wink of sleep last night." I looked him up and down. His crumpled clothes and the shadows under his eyes told me he hadn't slept much either. "Had a good night, did you?" I hated feeling this way, irritable and snappy. Alex worked hard and deserved a break, but last night had felt like a year without him. I rubbed the back of my neck, still feeling cold prickles after the silent call. "It was okay," he said, turning his gaze away from mine. "I could murder a coffee." Jamie's in the living room, I sighed. He threw me a smile, pressing his lips against my cheek in a belated greeting. But it was not before I caught the shadow crossing his face. I thought back to last night when I said I loved him, and he hadn't responded. Just who had he been with? He had lots of old friends in Leeds, men and women. Was that why he couldn't meet my gaze today? I inhaled a breath, telling myself not to be so paranoid. I had enough things to worry about, without adding infidelity to the list.
Daddy!
Jamie exclaimed from the living room as I put on the kettle.
We're adopting a polar bear!
I walked to the open door, listening in on their conversation.
Really? Alex said. Where's he going to sleep, then?
No, silly, Jamie giggled. He doesn't live here. I'd get a teddy instead. I'm going to call him Snowy.
I smiled. Jamie had just begun getting pocket money and had chosen to spend it on a donation to the WWF. Silently, I padded back to the kitchen, feeling a swell of pride. 20 minutes later, Alex followed me in, drawn by the smell of cooking which had carried into the hall.
You said you had a restless night, he said, gratefully taking his coffee.
Yes, I said, guarding my words. The last thing I wanted was to sound like some neurotic. It was stormy. Jamie was asleep and the television was turned off. I heard a bang, and then something rapped against the windows.
It's not surprising you're jumpy, Alex said, but it was probably the storm. There's always debris flying about.
I had a silent phone call, I said, glancing over my shoulder after I turned his omelette in the frying pan. Alex shrugged, his gaze on anywhere but me.
We're so exposed here. The phone lines probably went down. You won't know yourself when we move to the city. I've spoken to the vendor about that house I showed you online. It's even nicer in real life. I wish you'd seen it with me.
I plastered on my brightest smile, but inside I was horrified. I trust your judgment. Put an offer in. The sooner we're away from here, the better.
Alex leaned his head to one side as he looked at me. It's really creeped you out, me being away, hasn't it?
Next time, you're both coming with me. I dragged my nails down my arm, feeling anxiety crawling beneath my skin. I feel like I'm being watched. A bunch of sunflowers were delivered to the shop for me.
Sunflowers? Perhaps they were from one of your clients, Alex said, masking a yawn.
I nodded, frowning at his apparent lack of concern.
You don't seem that bothered.
What? Sorry, love, I'm just tired and hungry. I didn't sleep too well myself.
I'll make you some toast to go with this, I said, growing annoyed as I plated up his omelette.
Why was he being so blasé? I turned to face him, my eyes narrowing.
The flowers. The phone call. It's him. It has to be.
Alex picked up his knife and fork. I think you're worrying over nothing. An open window was not enough to release the smell of cooking from our tiny kitchen, and I fanned the back door open and closed until fresh air invaded the room. I stood silently, my mind working overtime as I waited for the toast to pop up. I had lied to cover up my eating disorder in the past. Was I like the boy who cried wolf now? I couldn't bear to see that look of disbelief on my husband's face again.
Aren't you going to join me? Alex said, briefly touching my hand.
Sure, I said, remembering my fainting attack last night. I had been slipping, losing myself to my eating disorder as I fought to regain control. I could not allow it to happen again.
Good, Alex said.
Despite my reservations, there was concern in his eyes. There's too much here for me. I popped the toast onto a plate and plopped down in the chair.
I'm just worried. I don't know what he's going to do next.
Again, he dismissed my fears with a shake of the head.
Babe, we're leaving. It's not as if we can go to the police. Don't let it bring you down.
Now, come on. Get some food inside you. Please.
I nodded dumbly, taking a fork from the drawer and spearing a piece of his omelette. I'd added cheese, ham and tomatoes, but it tasted like cardboard on my tongue. Chapter 34, Emma, 2017. An hour of fussing over Maggie had taken the edge off my morning, soothing my anxiety and calming my thoughts. Helping others was what I loved most about my business. It made me feel like I was worthwhile. As Maggie twirled in her latest choice of bridal gown, her smile lit up the room. Feeling a warm glow, I watched her sway before the mirror as she sang, "I could have danced all night." Josh handed me the camera. "One for the scrapbook," he said, with a smile to match my own. The photographs had been his idea, and he had hooked up our digital camera to a Bluetooth printer that delivered images in seconds. Every bride was given one when she chose her gown. That and a glass of Prosecco set us apart from other businesses in town. Thankfully, Maggie didn't drink, or she would have gotten through several bottles by now. Coming down from her cloud, she stood before me, flushed from her exertions. "I like this one. It feels swishy when I move." "Lace suits you," I said, handing Josh the camera as I escorted her to the changing rooms. Minutes later, she was out of her dress and back in her regular colorful clothes. I handed her the photo to add to her collection. "Here you go. Don't you look lovely? Bernard's a very lucky man." "He was," she said, with a sense of finality. "This is my last visit. I won't be coming back." "But..." I was just about to ask why, when she silenced me with a gaze. "I know there's no wedding. I always have. It's time to join the real world." She smoothed down her hair. "Still, it was nice while it lasted, and sweet of you to indulge me." "I don't understand," I said, still not wanting to burst the bubble. "My son's paid a visit. He's got it into his head that I'm senile. I don't want to go into a home. But Bernard is buried in the graveyard. I'll still visit him, have a little chat, but I know there's no wedding." "Still," she chuckled, "it was nice to pretend." "You do know you can come here any time, don't you?" I said, following her to the door. She shook her head sadly. "As the saying goes, the past is a nice place to visit, but not a good place to stay." As I saw her out, I wondered if I would be echoing her words when I was 80. "You okay?" Josh said, handing me a cup of green tea. "Ta," I said, feeling my throat constrict as I spoke. "Yeah, I'm all right, just feeling a bit sorry for Maggie." I looked him up and down. "You look nice." Gone were the ripped skinny jeans and sweater. In their place was a pair of smart black trousers and a white shirt. I was going to make a joke about him having a court appearance, but given my own predicament, I decided to hold back. "I thought I'd smarten myself up a bit," he explained. "You know, I was thinking, perhaps we could do a line in hire for gay weddings." "I thought we already did, if both brides hire dresses." "Why?" I said, giving him a wry grin. "What are you after? Rainbow color fabrics like the gay pride flag?" "Sounds good to me," Josh said, with a twinkle in his eye. I flashed him a smile. "What I want to know is, how come you get a lovely rainbow flag?" "I'll make you a flag if you like. What color would suit your lifestyle?" Josh said. "Black," I said morosely. "No, make it gray." "Like an old pair of knickers too long in the wash?" Josh grinned. "I can't see it catching on." I chuckled into my cup as I took a sip of tea. "Oh, you make me laugh," I said. "Did you actually have any sensible ideas, or were you just trying to cheer me up?" Josh clicked his fingers. "Oh yeah, I thought we could get a photography shoot done of same-sex couples, use them for promo in selected websites and wedding magazines. We could open the business up to a whole new stream of clients. People will travel if they know we cater for everyone." "Sure thing," I said, admiring his business acumen. "Do your research, work out how much budget we need for marketing, and I'll have a look." "Ooh, the boss lady is loosening her purse strings. There's a first time for everything, I suppose." I was just about to respond when there came a familiar jingle from above the shop door. "Saved by the Bell," I said with a smile. As I immersed myself with my client, I came to a decision. Maggie was right. The past was not a good place to live. I could not allow it to eat into my soul any longer. Josh had come on so much since I'd given him a chance. I could move to Leeds, knowing my business was in capable hands. It was time to give myself a second chance too. But the only way of doing that would be to find Luke and face up to what I had done. There was one person who would know where he was. His brother had moved away, but he had a sister who, so far as I knew, still lived in Colchester. For a long time I had dreaded bumping into her on the street and hoped I had changed enough that she would not recognize me immediately. But the days of hiding were behind me now. I thought of Jamie, my marriage, and everything I could not afford to lose. It was time to find Luke and put the ghosts of the past to rest. Chapter 35, Emma, 2002. Holding my breath, I pressed my finger on the stiff plastic doorbell. Luke's house loomed, large and imposing. It was a mansion compared to the tiny cottage I lived in. I cast an eye over his car parked on the gravel driveway, appreciating the scent of the chrysanthemums bordering the path. I felt like I was in a game of knockdown ginger with my sister, ready to run at the first sign of life. My grip around the bouquet of sunflowers tightened. They had cost me all my pocket money due to them being imported, but you couldn't put a price on love. I sniffed the flowers, thinking what a beautiful bridal bouquet they would make. I spent a lot of time daydreaming about weddings, when my thoughts weren't tied up with Luke. The sight of his shadow behind the frosted glass made my heart trip over itself in my chest. Wearing my brightest smile, I took a deep breath as he opened the door. "Hi," I said breezily, even though my limbs were trembling as I stood.
"Emma, what the fuck are you doing here?" Luke said, craning his neck from left and right before dragging me inside.
"Steady," I emitted a nervous giggle at the strength of his grip. "You're keen?" But as he slammed the door behind me, Luke's face relayed he was anything but. From a side room, I could hear the sounds of the television, and I wondered if we were alone. He was wearing a tracksuit, the zip half undone, revealing his toned chest. The same chest I had run my fingers over just a couple of nights before. Tearing my eyes away, I was taken aback to see the spike of annoyance in his gaze.
"I'll repeat the question, will I? What are you doing, turning up at my house?"
My smile fell as I absorbed the frosty reception. I heard you were sick. I thought I'd bring you some flowers to cheer you up.
"How did you find out where I lived?" he said. "What if my mother had answered the door? You're lucky she's out, or there would be hell to pay."
My fingers twisted into the bindings tying the bouquet. "You weren't answering my texts. I was worried."
"Worried about what?" he said, running his fingers through his hair. "And you haven't answered my question. How did you find out where I live?"
I responded with a half shrug, my throat dry. I couldn't allow myself to cry. I was an adult now. "I'm sorry," I said. "I thought you'd be pleased to see me." I held out the flowers, but Luke just laughed in my face.
"What did I say when we met? I'm not a kid, Emma, and this won't do. I don't want you coming here again, so you can take your sunflowers and go home."
"But I haven't got any bus fare left," I said. Naively, I had hoped he would give me a lift. Rooting around in his pocket, he produced £3 and shoved it into my hand. His lip arched in a sneer.
"Here. Get yourself a few sweets out of the change."
"Why are you being so nasty to me?" I said, hurt inflaming my words. "I don't understand." Luke sighed, as if he were speaking to an errant child. Look, what we had was fun, but it's over now. Best you accept that and move on. The tears I had been valiantly holding back forced themselves to the surface.
I don't understand.
Patting me on the back, Luke steered me towards the door. Best not to dwell on it. Off you go, and remember, not a word to anyone.
Paralyzed with disbelief, I stood frozen on the step as the door slammed behind me. The flowers fell from my grasp, my limbs barely able to make it up the gravel path. What had he meant? Best not to dwell on it. What had I done wrong?
Chapter 36. Luke, 2002.
Here, you look like you need it,
Lorraine said, shoving a freshly made coffee under my nose.
Cheers,
I said, gratefully accepting it from her grasp. Sitting in the staff room, I had chosen my moment carefully, wearing enough of a hangdog expression so she would ask me what was wrong. She was known as a caring soul, a busybody in my opinion, always ready to stick her nose into other people's business. But on this occasion, I wanted to turn it to my advantage, feed the rumor mill before it turned on me. Lorraine smoothed her long black skirt, her beaded necklace jangling as she sat. She had had her blonde hair cut short recently, giving her a pixie look. I thought about Emma, wondering if she had taken off her sunflower necklace and noticed the Made in China stamp on the back. I hung my head, hiding my smile. How I would have loved to have seen her expression as she realized she had been played. At least I'd managed to dump her before Christmas and spared myself the expense of another piece of tat.
All right, mate. Student's been running you ragged.
Sean Talbot's heavy paw clamped down onto my shoulder, spilling my coffee onto my hand. I shook my fingers to disperse the droplets, shaking my head in mock protest. Now the second of my fellow teachers was here, the stage was set. I had deliberately robbed myself of sleep and would put the dark circles under my eyes to good use. A few years older than me, Sean was a giant of a man. He was dark-haired, often unshaven, but very popular with staff. I had made it my business to befriend him from the onset, donating spare concert tickets, buying him an extra round in the pub. It had been worth the cost of my generosity to keep my name clear.
"Have you got 5 minutes to spare?"
I said, knowing their classes didn't begin for another 20.
"Of course, lovey,"
Lorraine said, wearing a concerned smile. I got up and closed the staff room door before sitting back down.
"Only this is a delicate matter," I said. "I'm not sure how to handle it."
"Go on, then. Spill the beans,"
Sean said, loudly slurping his coffee.
"It's one of my students. She's developed a bit of a crush on me."
I exhaled, like a kettle too long on the boil, tensing my body for effect.
"Let me guess. Vanessa Baker. The one that wears her skirt up to her backside,"
Sean said.
"I think she fancies all her teachers, that one. You just have to be careful not to say anything that might be taken the wrong way."
"That's just it," I said. "It's not Vanessa. It's Emma Hetherington, the last person you could accuse of being a flirt."
"Emma?" Lorraine piped up. "She's so quiet. What makes you think she's got designs on you?"
I exhaled loudly, shaking my head.
"I suppose I've only myself to blame. She's a real talent. I was giving her some extra art lessons, but lately she can't stay away."
"She's had problems at home, poor girl. She's been very isolated since her mother walked out on her. I've been trying to get her involved in some clubs after school, but she acts as a carer to her father too,"
Lorraine said.
"I know. She's confided in me a lot. At first I thought I was helping, but now when I'm in town I see her everywhere I go."
"You don't think she's following you, do you? Maybe you should report it to the head." That's the last thing I want to do. The poor girl's just started coming out of her shell. From what she's told me, she doesn't have many friends in her life right now.
Yes, mate, but you're not her friend. You're her teacher, Sean said. You need to keep things on a professional level, otherwise you'll come unstuck. The same thing happened to me last year. Remember Jenny? He turned to Lorraine and she responded with a knowing nod. She found my mobile number, Sean said. She started texting me after school. My girlfriend went ballistic, gave her a piece of her mind.
What do you think I should do? I said. I don't want to go to the head with this. Not yet.
Put an end to those extra classes, at least until things cool down. Don't leave yourself vulnerable. Keep the classroom door open during lunch, so if she wanders in, everything is open and above board. I'll talk to her again. See if I can get her involved in some group activities.
But if she starts stalking you or acting weird, you're going to have to report it to the head, Sean interjected. Don't leave yourself open to allegations. Get there first before she does.
I nodded. He was voicing my thoughts. The part about Emma following me was a lie, but I had received 3 texts already this morning. She was too clingy for my liking, and not worth putting my job at risk for. It was time to nip this dalliance in the bud before things got out of hand.
Chapter 37 Alex 2017 If betrayal had a smell, it would be that of tar. The kind that sticks to your shoes in the heat of midsummer and bubbles like a living thing on the road. Emma and I had offered each other weary smiles as we pretended everything was all right. I had shrugged off her concerns that someone had invaded our home, tapping on the window while I was away. She must have imagined it. How could this be possible, when Luke had been in the pub with me that night? I felt sick at the thought, and at the prospect of what I was about to do. Involving our son in our troubles was the last thing I wanted, but I desperately needed to know the truth. Jamie squealed with delight as I lifted him in the air, pretending to drop him, only to take him in my arms again. I inhaled the scent of licorice shoelaces on his breath, allowed only on the condition that he brush his teeth afterwards. Plopping him on our bathroom counter, I wore my best smile. I'd locked the door. Emma would be horrified if she knew what I was about to do. But then how many times had she visited our little bathroom to force herself to vomit when she had eaten just minutes before? The scent of lemon bleach and floral air freshener gave her away every time. If only the rest of her secrets were as easily deciphered. Reaching across the counter, I carried out my own form of betrayal.
Ready to brush your teeth, I said,
watching Jamie's eyes roam to the DNA testing kit in my hands.
What's that?
He said, his childish lisp melting my heart.
It's a special way of cleaning your teeth. First, you open up.
I gently held his chin between my finger and thumb, dropping it open to insert the bud.
Then I give it a little wiggle like this.
I moved the swab left to right as instructed.
Then, hey presto, you're now ready to brush your teeth.
Jamie's tongue roamed over the inside of his gum, where I'd gathered his DNA.
But what was that, Daddy?
Daddy. The word speared my heart. My smile wobbled, and I fought to keep my tone bright.
It's just to check that you've not eaten too many sweets. We'd better not tell Mummy. She might not let you have them again. What say you give your teeth a good brush now? Have them all nice and clean.
I set him down from the counter and ruffled his hair. Pocketing the kit, I had never felt so low. I said a silent prayer that it would give me the answers I wanted.
Smells nice, I said,
inhaling the aroma of white wine sauce as I stepped into the kitchen. Pots and pans bubbled on the arga, filling the room with steam. The extractor had packed up long ago, and I had not got round to fixing it. I opened the back door, allowing the breeze to sweep the steam outside. Emma sniffed, tears streaking down her face.
Onions. They get me every time, she said,
nodding towards the chopped pile.
It's chicken, cauliflower cheese and some nice new potatoes.
She rinsed her hands under the tap before drying them on a tea towel.
What are you looking for?
I continued to rummage in the kitchen cabinet drawer. Car keys. I swear I've just left them here.
They're on the hook in the hall. You're not going out, are you? Dinner will be ready in 20 minutes.
I thought I could get us a nice bottle of wine to go with our meal, I said, blurting out the best excuse I could think of. Emma closed the back door, rubbing her arms as the intrusive breeze plucked goosebumps on her skin.
I've got some. I was using it for the sauce.
I glanced at the wine label. I'm sure we can do better than that. I won't be long. I promised Jamie I'd pick him up some ice cream. Emma raised an eyebrow.
Ice cream and sweets in one day.
It's okay, Mummy.
Jamie piped up from where he was colouring at the table.
Daddy's got a special way of checking my teeth.
Oh, yes.
Emma raised an eyebrow in my direction.
A dentist now, are we? Is there anything you can't do?
I laughed, kissing her on the cheek. You know me. I'll give anything a go once. The pot's boiling over, by the way. Her attention diverted. I grabbed the keys from the hall and made my way to the car. That was close. Too close. I made a mental note to tell Emma we had been flossing if she pressed me about it. Not that she would. She'd be too busy throwing up. I caught the unkind thought as it shot across my consciousness. What had happened was changing all of us, and I hated the direction in which I was being taken. After posting the sample and picking up some groceries, I headed back home. I could have left it until tomorrow, but I wanted to make the post. The £300 I was paying for a quicker result would be worth every penny. There was no way I could have waited. I hated putting on a pretense that everything was okay. Jamie was mine. He had to be. And the sooner I got a positive result confirming this, the better. Because the alternative did not bear thinking about.
Chapter 38. Emma, 2017. Blinking in the darkness, I lay next to Alex, his shallow breathing the only sound in the room. It was one of those utterly black nights when the sky was thick with clouds, the moon and stars extinguished from view. My darkest memories crawled out of their box, clawing at my insides as I recalled what I had done. I imagined our oak tree, its bare branches stark against the grey, lifeless landscape. Dad, sitting on the bench he had built at its base, staring mournfully into the skyline as he thought about Mum. It was a haunting scene in my memory, coming to me with greater clarity now the lights had been doused in every room of our home. It had been Alex's idea to turn them off, citing a migraine that had come on after supper. But I knew from his sideways glances that he could not bear to look at my face. I closed my eyes as tiredness washed over me, my throat still sore from bringing up the food I had so carefully prepared. So much for my resolve. Had Alex really gone to the shops before dinner, or was it just an excuse to get away? The thought swam with all the others in a murky distillery of gloom. Falling into sleep, my dream returned me to my childhood. I was 4 years of age, squirming as I awoke in damp flannel sheets. I had wet the bed again. I knew that Mummy would be mad. I blinked in the darkness. Eyes open or closed, it all looked the same. My room was blacker than the night outside. I slid from between the sheets, landing the balls of my feet on the harsh wooden floor. My heart fluttered like a hummingbird as my wet nightdress sent a chill through to my skin. Mummy told me that if I got out of bed, that the ghost of the Strood would get me. But I was more afraid of my mummy than the ghost. I reached out with my fingers splayed, blindly patted the blankets until I found the bedpost, which led me to the wall. Grasping the edge of the thick polyester curtains, I pulled hard until a chink of light filtered through my small box room. My gaze fell to the floor, half expecting a decaying hand to shoot out and grab me by the ankle. Grunting, I tugged the blankets on my bed, but they were too thick and heavy, and hot tears fell down my cheeks as I realized I couldn't change the sheets by myself. The more I pulled, the heavier they became. A whine growing in my throat, I climbed on top of the bed and curled up on my pillow. With a slow creak, my bedroom door opened. My heart pounding hard, I stuffed my fist into my mouth, trying to hold back my scream at the sight of the long, reedy shadow bleeding through. Was the ghost really coming to get me? A hand reached out, flicking the light switch on the wall. Bright light flooded my bedroom, stinging my eyes and chasing the shadows away. It was my father. I jumped from my bed, wrapping my chubby fingers tightly around his neck as he crouched down to speak to me. I took comfort from his earthy smell. I knew Daddy went away to dig for treasure, but archaeology was too big a word for me to fully understand. Frowning, he took in the messy bed, the damp nightdress. "Have you wet the bed again? Why didn't you tell Mummy?" he said. My words came in choked sobs as my 4-year-old body shuddered in response.
Mummy said the ghost would get me if I left my bed.
Undoing my fingers, he rose from his position, his leather shoes creaking on the floorboards as he walked. Picking up the empty jug on the dresser, he gave me a curious glance. "How much have you had to drink?" I stood open-mouthed, but my words would not come. He knelt for a second time, his voice soft and coaxing as he told me I had done nothing wrong.
"Mummy said I had to drink it all," I said.
My voice was barely a whisper. As his frown returned, I realized it was Mummy who was in trouble, not me. It gave me a certain satisfaction that I wasn't the only person who got things wrong. Quickly, Daddy changed the sheets and dressed me for bed. Tugging at my curtains, he opened them wide and left them that way. I liked it when Daddy was home. I scooted to the edge of the bed. The stale scent of urine hung in the air, the damp mattress soaking through the freshly laid sheets. Muffled voices filtered from my parents' bedroom as my father asked my mother why she had insisted I drink so much before bed. Mum denied it, of course, calling me an attention seeker and a liar. I knew what those words meant because I had been called them before. I had come to hate the sound of her angry voice. It was a rough, grating noise, echoing like a trapped crow in the room. I wished that Daddy didn't have to go away, so Mummy could be happy all the time and wouldn't drink the brown stuff from the bottle that made her so mad.
"You've been drinking again, haven't you? For Christ's sake, Isabel, she's 4 years old," my father said,
and I wondered what my age had to do with it. The bed springs bounced and squeaked as if to signal it was the end of the conversation. I imagined my mother turning around to face the wall, grasping handfuls of blankets in her bony fists. A light switch clicked off, and the sound of change rattled against the floor as my father undressed. It was a comforting noise, but morning would bring more disapproval after he left. I whimpered, tears pricking my eyes.
"Emma," a voice said, from so very far away. "Emma, it's okay. It's just a dream."
I blinked in the darkness at the hand gently shaking my shoulder. Disorientated and groggy, it still felt as if I were a child, back in the room where Jamie now slept. "What?" I murmured, taking a slow breath. Alex stretched to switch on his bedside lamp.
"You were crying in your sleep. Are you all right?"
I touched my cheeks, which were wet with tears. No wonder the dream felt so real. I steadied my voice, vowing my son would never hear the harsh whispers that had been a backdrop to my childhood. I'm okay. Sorry I woke you. Seconds ticked by as we lay in the dark, my past circling around us like a kettle of vultures. Slowly, Alex's hand reached across the void and cupped mine. I squeezed it back.
It's going to be okay, I whispered. We'll get through this.
But my voice contained more confidence than I felt. Chapter 39, Emma, 2017. Spikes of rain hammered my car windscreen, making me curse the inclement weather. It felt like a lifetime since I had enjoyed the sun on my face. It would have been better to stay at home and talk things through with Alex, but Josh had been unable to cover my shift at work. Not that I expected customers in this weather. For once, my diary was free of appointments, and I was very tempted to tell Teresa to shut the shop for the afternoon. But I had forced myself out of the house just the same. Besides, it was bring your teddy to school day today, and Jamie could not wait to participate in the indoor picnic they had planned for lunch. I was all too aware that I was running late as the clock on the car's dashboard showed 11 a.m. By the time I got the buggy out of the boot and put Jamie in, he would be soaked. I pulled up the handbrake and turned round to face my son. I'm just going to get a parking ticket from the machine. It's just over there, I pointed. You stay here in the warm, and I'll be back in a second. Jamie nodded, staring out at the rain. I rooted through the glove compartment for change. Like many family cars, the space was stuffed with a half-eaten packet of sweets, wet wipes, receipts, and old coins. Taking the keys from the ignition, I shoved them in my pocket before pulling out my red umbrella and opening it through the crack in the door. Back in 1 second, I said once again. You can watch. Like a meerkat, Jamie's head bobbed as he tried to get a clear view of outside.
But I can't see, Mummy, he said,
straining against his straps towards the breath-fogged pane. Turning back in my seat, I clicked the button of his seatbelt, allowing him enough freedom to watch me get the ticket. I'm going to lock the car, okay? You stay inside and watch Mummy. I won't be a second. Hunching my shoulders, I pulled my collar up and faced the rain. It pattered hard against the thin fabric of my umbrella, and I activated the car's central locking system before tottering through the puddles towards the ticket machine. I had the sense to wear trousers today, my billowing blouse kept dry beneath my long fleece coat. I rifled through my change, depositing it into the machine. I was just about to turn round when the sudden screech of car tires filled the air, chilling me to the marrow of my bones. Time seemed to stop in that second, and I was snapped back into reality as I heard a child's cry. Jamie, my child. No, 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 the syllables fired from my mouth as my umbrella fell to the ground. My eyes flitted from my car door that was wide open, and the 4x4 parked awkwardly nearby. I sprinted towards it, my eyes fixed on the small hand jutting out on the concrete, and the teddy bear thrown to one side. Oh my God! The driver's screams filled the air as she scrambled out of her Range Rover, almost tumbling over herself in her haste to reach my son. Jamie! I cried, falling to my knees, searching the puddles for a reddish tint of blood. Raindrops splattered his face, and he blinked, his little hands clawing the air like a tortoise that had been flipped onto its back. The tall, thin figure of the driver loomed over us, her hands on her mouth. Her long blonde hair trailed down the sides of her face as the rain dripped down its length. He ran straight in front of me. I didn't see him. But I was too busy dialing 999 as I tried to shelter my son from the rain. It was an automatic reaction, and I struggled to find the words to call for help.
Mummy,
Jamie cried, apparently none the worse for wear. It's okay, sweetie. You're going to be okay, I said, my heart feeling like it was going to beat its way out of my chest. My left hand holding the phone, I patted down my son with my right, unable to believe he had escaped with his life. He ran out in front of me, the woman repeated, her voice trembling above me. I didn't hit him. I braked the second I saw him. He tripped over his own feet.
What's your emergency? A voice said on the other end of the line. I blurted out my location, requesting an ambulance, as I told the operator my son had been knocked down.
Jamie was crying, and warm tears fell down my cheeks as I realized what I had almost lost. I touched his face, checked the grazes on his hands from where he had fallen. Reaching out for his teddy, I drew them both near as I sat in the icy cold puddle, rain driving down my face. I craned my neck to stare at the driver, her face white and frozen in shock.
He came from nowhere. I didn't hit him, I swear.
Her words were disjointed, raised against the fury of the rain. Mascara streaks began to tear down her cheeks, her fingers touching her lips as if caressing the words for comfort. I glanced back at my car, to the back door that was wide open. I had locked it when I left. I was sure of it. So how did he get out? A memory reignited in my brain, old and rusted. Harry, the golden retriever, lying bloodied and lifeless on a day just like this. I heaved for breath, feeling my grip on reality loosen a notch. Sitting in the back of the ambulance, I took comfort from the fact that no injuries were found. I had not expected the presence of a police officer as paramedics checked Jamie over. After catching his breath, Jamie was able to tell them that he had tripped over and fallen, but had not been hit by the car. He seemed excited by the prospect of being in an ambulance, and his eyes grew wide as a uniformed officer joined us, introducing herself to him with a smile. PC Bakewell seemed far less enamored with me, however. After obtaining my details, she informed me that an automatic referral would be made to Children's Social Services. Why? I said, suddenly feeling small under her disapproving gaze. An efficient-looking woman with short brown hair, she turned over the page of her notebook and wrote down my details. I only took my eyes off him for a second, I said, panic lacing my words. The child lock was on in the car. Somebody must have opened the door from the outside. The thought hadn't entered my head until that second when I blurted it out. My eyes opened wide with the revelation. Yes, that's it. Someone opened the door of my car and let him out. He was running across the car park to see me. I hesitated as I tried to work it out. Had I activated the central locking? If I had, then how could somebody have opened the car door? PC Bakewell raised an eyebrow in a manner that suggested she was thinking the same thing. Did you see anybody else around? I frowned. No. Have you asked the woman driving the 4x4? She might have seen something. But the police officer stared unblinkingly, seeming unimpressed. It's a public car park. There's bound to be people hanging around. Besides, why would someone do that? Just how long had you left your child alone? I pursed my lips, feeling them strain over my teeth as I sucked hard. I thought about Luke and what would happen if I told the police the truth. It was him. It had to be. He was watching me, waiting for me to fall. I shook my head. I don't know. Seconds, I said wearily, watching as my child was given the all clear. I wanted to draw him close, to smother him in kisses and never let him go. I could blame Luke all I wanted. This was my fault. Right now, I was the biggest threat to my child. PC Bakewell smiled at Jamie, lowering her voice as she gave me words of advice. Visibility is very bad with all this rain. Your son could have been killed. The tone of her voice told me she placed the blame solely on my shoulders. I've seen too many incidents like this with horrific outcomes. Don't take your eyes off your child again. She looked at me with eyes that spoke of memories of incidents she preferred to forget. Anyway, she offered up a brief smile. I'm glad that luck was on your side. Don't let it happen again. After a quick word with the paramedic, she bid me goodbye. Jamie was going to be okay, but I would not be going into work today. After I had promised to make it up to him with ice cream, we headed home. I needed to tell Alex what had happened before he heard it from anybody else. I looked at the keys in my shaking hand and wondered if I could trust myself to drive. After tucking Jamie into his car seat, I slid behind the steering wheel. I caught my reflection in the mirror, barely recognizing the person staring back at me. My eyes were bloodshot, my face chalk white with shock. This would not be the end of it. Social services would now have a record of my carelessness, and I would have to explain myself all over again. How had I allowed my child to toddle across the car park in the pouring rain, resulting in him almost being run over? What sort of mother did that make me? What sort of person? After all we had been through to have our beautiful child, I pushed my key into the ignition. I had tried to force these feelings away and concentrate on calling home to break the news. Alex could barely look me in the eye as it was. Had it been an accident, or had my past reared up to greet me once again?
Chapter 40. Alex. 2017. My phone's ringtone drilled into my brain, resurrecting the sense of dread that had been keeping me company all day. I was plagued with a premonition that had made it near impossible to catch up with my work from home. It seemed crazy to worry about such a simple thing as Emma taking Jamie to nursery, but when I came home from Leeds, she was so paranoid and upset, I wondered if there was more to her state of mind than she was letting on. I could not bear to confront her about Luke, at least not until I had the DNA results in my hand. Now, as her name flashed up on the screen, I knew I had been right to feel worried. The first thing she told me was that she was at the shops with Jamie, picking up ice cream before they came home. This deviation from the usual routine quickened my pulse, and I could tell from the tremor in her voice that, despite her reassurances, something was very wrong. Slowly, she relayed what had happened, her voice growing hushed as she told me about the accident. Jamie piped up in the background, asking her to hurry up so he could eat his ice cream at home. I stood, my heart in my throat as the papers I had been holding fell to the floor. Emma calmly spoke as if she had been reading the words from a prompt. I took a breath, grounding myself as I absorbed the news. "Are you sure he's okay?" I said, imagining Jamie in the back of an ambulance while I was casually browsing over figures between puffs on my vaporizer.
"He's fine. We both are,"
she said, as I strained to hear over the beeps of the checkout till in the background.
"He's been checked over by the paramedics as a precaution, and he's none the worse for wear. Can you get the heating on, like the fire? We're soaked through. I've promised him Ben and Jerry's and his favorite program on TV."
I peered through the window and watched the rain hammer down. "Why didn't you call me when it happened?" I said, unable to comprehend the logic. "I should have been there. He must have been terrified." A frisson of annoyance rose up inside me, as Emma continued to reassure me in a ridiculously calm tone. What had she said to the police and paramedics? Now we had a social services referral to worry about too. Mum would be horrified. This sort of thing may have been the norm in Emma's family, but... I pulled away from the window, bitter seeds of disgust blooming inside me. How could she leave me in the dark when our son could have been killed? Or did she think that I could wait, given that I was not his natural father?
"I'm sorry," she said. "Look, this isn't the time. We're both soaking wet and we need to get home. We can talk about it then."
My fury remained long after the call ended. Jamie was little more than a toddler. Why hadn't she been watching him? I had accepted that Emma had her own struggles to contend with, and was not always as focused as she should have been. But this was different. This involved our defenseless child. Was she fit to look after him at all? As we lay in bed that night, I stared up at the ceiling, wondering what had happened to our happy home. Had it ever really existed at all? I turned towards Emma, touching her hair and smoothing it. "Are you awake?" I said, knowing she was.
Her steady inhalation of breath paused as she considered her response. After a couple of seconds, she turned to face me, her eyes wet with tears. I felt a soft, warm pang in my heart at the sight of the woman I loved so upset because of something I had said. Our argument had been whispered, so as to protect our son. But that did not stop my words cutting her to the bone. I'd witnessed the pain in her eyes as my accusations found a home. We'd been through some tough times, and she had done a terrible thing, leaving Jamie alone in the car. But I was her husband, and the day I took my vows, I had sworn to stay with her through thick and thin. What sort of a man was I, abandoning her when she needed me the most? "I'm sorry," I said. "I shouldn't have taken my anger out on you. Jamie is fine. That's the most important thing." She nodded, biting down on her bottom lip as she held in a sob. The light of the moon filtered in through our window, displaying the remorse etched on her face. "We'll get through this," I said, wiping away her tear with my thumb. "What's done is done. We have a whole new life in front of us. You, me, and Jamie. He needs us to be strong."
"That's all I want," she said quietly. "Our little family. I promise. I won't take my eyes off him again."
At least she wasn't trying to shift the blame anymore. That's what had riled me in the first place. Instead of being sorry for leaving him, she had used Luke as an excuse, rather than face up to her responsibilities. It was Luke who had opened the car door, just as it was Luke who had made the silent call and rapped on our window the night before. It was a good job I'd not told her about the dead mouse I found in the kitchen today, or she would have blamed Luke for that too. Had Emma convinced herself that everything was his fault? According to Luke, the only person I should be worried about was my wife, who had some serious mental health issues. I had tried to question Jamie tentatively, but he had clammed up, no longer willing to speak about it. "Do you think you forgot to lock the car?" I said, keeping my tone gentle so as not to sound like an accusation. "Is it possible you might not have pressed the central locking button?"
"It was pouring with rain," she said. "I was fiddling with my umbrella, as well as the change for the car park. I'm sure I locked it. I heard it click."
I interlocked my hands behind my head as I lay on the pillow, trying to make sense of it all. "You might have pressed the button to open the doors by mistake. That makes a clicking sound too." Silence passed between us, and all I could hear was the soft brush of the wind against the window pane. Somewhere in the distance, an owl shrieked. A wave of tiredness overcame me.
"I don't know," she said eventually. "I'm tired of talking about it. I just want to go to sleep."
I felt the gap between us widen. It was almost like a physical shift as Emma drew herself away to the edge of the bed. Up until then, I'd always been the one who fixed things. But now I lay there, my head full of dismantled thoughts that I could not repair. Emma was upset because I had not sided with her straight away. But it was such a big ask when my head was still filled with revelations. She said she had killed someone, yet their body was gone. She claimed she had been stalked by Luke, yet the man I'd met was polite and charming, and said Emma was dangerous and unhinged. I'd cast his words aside as I didn't want to believe them. I told myself that, when we moved, everything would be okay. But we were building up to something. I could feel it. Jamie could have died due to Emma's lack of care. I was out of my depth. I needed to speak to somebody who could advise me what to do. Teresa. If anyone knew the truth about Luke and Emma, it would be her. She was the one person I trusted to tell it like it was.
"He's out there," Emma said,
just as I was drifting off to sleep.
"He's out there waiting for me, and there's nothing I can do."
I blinked, checking the bedside clock. It was 3 in the morning. "Emma?" I said, listening in the darkness for her response. But she was asleep, having another bad dream. I closed my eyes, wishing we could escape this living nightmare.